All right, kick it.
Planet.
All right, everybody, welcome back to season two. This is episode two of the Aletheia Leaders Podcast. I'm Donnie Fisher, the host of this podcast and also the executive pastor here at Aletheia. And I'm joined, as always, with our producer, Tyler Parker.
Yep.
Good to see you, Tyler. And also my co-host for this season, Sarah McCarthy. Hey, Sarah. Good to see you, too.
Hey.
Glad to be here with y'all.
I think that we should say that the reason the room may or may not sound echoey is because we're not in the multipurpose room. We're actually in the theater because we just wanted to add a little bit of elegance to the intro and outro.
You think one of us should say that?
I've already said it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I thought that somebody should say it.
Great.
They're very classy echoes in the theater.
Oh, it's very nice in here. Nice to record with you all in a place of high quality. That has nice new paint, thanks to the one and only Steve Cabral, as well as many of our volunteers in our church. I'm always glad to be in this room now because it's no longer horrendous. So thank you, volunteers, for those of you who helped with that.
Thanks.
But we're excited today, first of all, because we've taken Tyler's finger off the sound effects button for this episode. Isn't that right, Sarah?
That it is.
All his fingers are currently taped to the table because last week, Tyler, they were slightly excessive, don't we think?
Yeah, I can confess to that.
You can confess to that. Okay. All right. Just so. But it was too late. Once the interwebs had it, we couldn't pull it back. It was like when you said the thing to like your wife or your girlfriend that you should never say and you just couldn't pull it back.
Yeah, it's in the ether now.
Yeah, that's what I felt like when I listened to that podcast after it was out. But
you thought of the word ether?
Yeah, ether.
Gotcha.
That always comes to mind when I think of you and your work. So.
It's a good thing Tyler gets to edit this.
Tyler does. So maybe that'll lose.
It's okay. These can stay in.
That'll be on the shopping room, cutting room floor. But Tyler, no, thanks so much for taking these recordings and helping us with them. But I'm excited today. Who are we going to be talking to in this recording, Sarah?
Today we are talking to Josh Rule and Abigail Connor.
Hey. Yes.
They are the current and past leaders of the setup team in Cambridge. And they're going to be talking to us about making disciples on their team and what it has been like taking the setup team from a team that just sets chairs up in the gym on Sundays to a team that absolutely does that, but is very much focused on making disciples.
Yeah, they've done a really great job. And I know that I have been super encouraged as one of the pastors here. But the two of you, I bet even I hope we're able, as we were recording this, we're able to glean some from them because both you, Tyler, and Sarah, you both lead teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So did you find what they had to say to be helpful?
For sure.
Yeah. Yes. And you're not just saying that because I write a check, right, Tyler?
That's right.
All right. Well, great. Well, here's the recording, everybody listening, or what Abigail and Josh had to say. Super helpful, super thankful for their leadership. And it's very practical stuff that you can implement or begin to think about and apply in your own context. Take us in, Tyler. All right, leaders, we're sitting here with Josh Rule and Abigail Connor. Hi, guys.
Hey.
So good to be here with you. Sarah and I are having the privilege today of talking to these two about something that is near and dear to our heart. At least Sarah and I have been a lot. Scratched that whole part out, Tyler, that I just said.
He's probably not going to scratch it.
He's not going to scratch anything, is he? Okay, so we're sitting here together to talk about team leadership and discipleship. And I could think of nobody else better than the current leader of the setup team, which is Abigail Connor, and the previous leader, whom she supplanted, Josh.
Hostile Rule. Takeover.
Hostile takeover of the setup team.
I'll get it back one day.
Yes, so you get it back. It might not be an initial thought of people to think, okay, what team would we think of making disciples as the setup team? Why do we pick them, Sarah?
Yeah. So at one of the first team leader meetings I think we ever had with the heads of each team, Donnie got us all together and he made us go around the room and have everybody say what the purpose of their team was. So we went around and it was like, purpose of my team is to put signs out so people know where they're supposed to go, or is to make coffee, or is to share the gospel with kids.
Yeah, and so leaders, imagine this. We're in a room, a tight room with like, I think like 20 people, all of our downtown team leads, all of our Cambridge team leads are sitting there. And we were working our way around the room, all the way around the room. And this went on for 15 minutes, longer, 20.
And we get to Josh Rule pretty much at the end of the room, like one or two people from the very end. And he just says, the setup team exists to make disciples.
And it was like mic drop.
All the rest of us tried to crawl under the table.
Everybody else felt like they got Jesus juked straight out of their shoes. It was a great move, Josh. Still to this day is legendary. It comes up often. It's legendary, Josh. Thank you for that moment. Happy to make a memory. So, of course,
the point of that leaders meeting was that Donnie was getting us all together to remind us that the point of our team is to make disciples. So Josh got the right answer before Pastor Donnie had even shared it with us.
Full disclosure, though, had I told you that in advance, Josh, did you know that was coming?
No, I think I was just trying to be contrarian.
Yeah.
I was like, well, clearly this is the point of all of our teams. So
what is wrong with you guys? Like, is the idea. So, all right, straight on Abigail the whole time so that when you laugh, we can hear it. There you go. Yeah, there you go. So, well, cool. So, Josh, why did you say that day? Like, seriously, though, I know you wanted to be contrarian. Was that something you had thought about before that moment? But even beyond that, just straight in here, was it something that you were already working at as a team leader? Or was that something that was just kind of like an epiphany moment for you?
I don't know that it was an epiphany moment right then. I think I kind of knew that's why Aletheia exists. So if my team is part of Aletheia, then that must be why we're here. I don't know that I'd really connected that to anything explicit where I was like, here are the like five things we're going to do to make disciples.
Yeah.
I think it was more like, and I hope that somehow doing this helps with that and setting out chairs. Cause that's what we mostly do. And that's being a very practical sort of person where a lot of my attention goes on a Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. But I knew that somehow, some way that was really what we were supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And if we weren't doing that, then why we even have this team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Did you feel like leading up to that moment, I know you said, okay, so our purpose is to make disciples. Were you thinking, when you said that, were you thinking about the people on your team? Or were you thinking about as a team making, you see this is a subtle difference. Were you thinking that in that moment? Now we've defined that a little bit more recently and over the years, but in that moment, were you thinking, okay, our team's goal is to make disciples of those who would come? Or were you thinking about even within the team that we're to make disciples?
Oh, I don't remember. It was years ago.
But you've had a couple of babies since then. A lot has happened. A
lot of sleepless nights. A lot of brain cells have died. But I guess probably at that point, if I can retroject, I was thinking something like, hopefully this refines people's character because we're doing manual labor for the good of other people.
Yeah.
But also, I think the main thing I thought about was getting rid of barriers to the gospel. So if we had to have a bunch of people come and stand and huddle next to a stage or just next to a speaker because we didn't have a stage, we didn't have chairs,
right.
That'd be kind of a barrier to a lot of people coming in and feeling comfortable hearing the gospel.
Yeah.
And so I think primarily that's what I was thinking about is how do we get rid of a very practical obstacle, which is the fact that we don't have a sanctuary.
Yeah. So at that time, Abigail, was she already leading on your team at that point? I can't quite remember the...
Yeah, I led before Josh.
You led before Josh?
I'm pretty sure. Or were we at the same time?
I don't know.
In my mind, I was first.
Remember, like, Abigail,
I know enough about you. You're competitive enough to know that in your mind, you're always first. So like, that's like...
It's still being refined.
It's still being... That's a good thing. Competition is not bad. So that's good.
She's the best at it, though.
She is the best. My favorite story about Abigail is when one morning something was broken and Kevin borrowed her pocket knife, her really large pocket knife, and then he broke it.
Yep.
And she almost broke him because that's a big deal.
He said he'd buy me a new one, and he did, but it was maybe 6 months later.
No. We bought you a new one.
Oh.
And he didn't give it to you. Mm. It was in his pocket. So Kevin McKenzie, everybody. So
love you, Kev.
Yeah, so, well, then there was a clear moment. So... in that, going back to that leaders meeting years ago now, we were sitting in that very tight conference space together, and we started talking about, okay, we have to make disciples
within our team as well. Now, obviously, the goal of having church is we're making disciples, we're creating a space in which disciples will be made as a church, but also as leaders, the people that we're leading in performing specific tasks, executing a task, even in the context of that execution, of very menial times. You know, we're talking here again, the setup team, building stages, setting up backdrops, putting up chairs. There's a lot of people and a lot of moving parts, but somehow, some way, trying to find a way to, within that framework, make disciples. What was it like starting to make that shift for you? Because I know on your end, Josh, talking with you through it a lot, because also full disclosure, Josh ended up leading the way that a lot of people have ended up leading things in our church was basically I threw it in his lap and said, I need you to do this. And he said, okay. What was it like making that shift for you all to just beyond, okay, we're not just here to make a task, because this is something I would argue, I know you were leading as well, Abigail, but under Josh's leadership for the first time, when that team of leaders started focusing on this, started really taking place. And I think it has been a model for a lot of what our other teams have done over the years. So what was that shift like and how did that take place? And what are some of the practical steps you took?
So I remember, so I think I was the first leader of the setup team as the setup and teardown team. That before we'd had kind of a back of house team that did a lot of different things. They worked on the audio stuff. They worked on setting up and tearing down. That was kind of anybody that wasn't what we now today think of as a red shirt. We were all on the one team. All the gray shirts were on one team.
Yeah.
And
before the great divide.
Before the great divide. Yeah. And so there were practices that were already in place that team had been doing. Like we always circled up before we set up every morning. And mostly that was so that we could learn everybody's names and figure out kind of who was going to take what part in this kind of crazy, you know, chickens running around with their heads cut off that turns into a sanctuary.
Yeah.
And I think that was maybe one of the first places that I started was, okay, so how can we use this to catalyze thinking about discipleship in the rest of the morning? How can we take this and just share a thought that comes from scripture or comes from our experience over the last couple of weeks as Christians so that we have something to be thinking about, to be talking about, to be meditating on as we spend a lot of time maybe by ourselves setting up chairs or with another person.
Let's see. Josh, can you give a practical example of what one of those moments might have looked like when you all huddle up, what it looks like to really focus on discipleship in that moment?
Sure. I mean, I think it's something as simple as reminding people, okay, this team practically, here's a way that we help the rest of Aletheia make disciples. We get this task out of the way and we know how to do it. We can get it done quickly and we serve the rest of the church and the rest of the people that aren't part of our church that are going to be here today by doing that. And helping people take a little bit of ownership of how what we're doing is connected to the thing we really care about.
Yeah.
Which isn't chairs, but Jesus. And then, I don't know, I'd pick a proverb. I'd pick something from the New Testament. I'd pick just a short passage and read it with people and say, hey, this is something I want us to be thinking about because I think it applies to what we're doing here today. So that might be, there's this great proverb that somebody who loudly blesses their neighbor in the morning, that blessing will be taken as a curse. And it would just be, you know what, guys, we get here at 6:30 and not everybody else does get here at 6:30. Mm-hmm. So when you see somebody else, like, commiserate with them on how early they had to get here. don't be a jerk about the fact that you've been here for a while. Just think about the other people who are here.
Awesome. Cool. What was it like, I guess either one of you can speak to this, helping bring your team leaders along in that transition? So for anyone who isn't familiar with how our teams are run, we have a point leader on each team that's over the whole team, but then we have Sunday team leaders that lead each of the different shifts. So a shift like this would mostly be run, not necessarily by you, Josh, as the like main point leader, but by the 8 or 10 people who serve as team leads on a Sunday. So what was it like casting vision for this to them? Or Abigail, what was it like receiving that, being on the receiving end of that as a team lead at the time?
Yeah, I remember the meeting we had where Josh kind of outlined everything and he had everything together and thought about it. probably had met with Donnie beforehand, and it was at Mass Ave Diner. And we all got there, went over all his notes, and just like presented it to us of like, hey, this is the direction we're all headed. This is why. This is the biblical reasons. And these are practical ways that it can happen. So I guess just getting us all on board, all in the same room at the same time, which is an intentional thing because we're not, as leaders, we're always on different teams. We're never even setting up together. It's always separate. So I think most of the bonding and discipleship within the team leaders happens outside of a Sunday. Happens, like, I think we used to meet up before the big group leaders meeting, just as a team to go over things. And it's actually something I'm bad at doing, but me too, you were really good at, was making
free
sure.
Breakfast, so.
Yeah, getting together outside of church and just kind of going over things. And that's something that we have to continually do because it's easy to lose sight of what the overarching goal is. Anyone who's on setup is probably there because they're a task-oriented person. So it's, you know, we like doing things. Doing things is why we're on the team, but kind of having to realign ourselves and reminding ourselves and our teams of why we're here is something that has to happen continually.
Yeah. So I remember meeting at Mass Ave Diner and I remember going through some of those notes, but then I think at the time we only had like four leads. It was like Mike, Abigail, and Nate Odie. And they ran with this and they had all sorts of ideas for things we could be doing and should be doing that I hadn't thought of, that Donnie and I had never talked about. And I think a lot of what is happening in terms of discipleship now on the team comes from something that one of the three of them started. And that's great. I think it was a little hard for me because I was like, I'm the leader. I should be like coming up with all the ideas and leading from the front. But was a really cool lesson for me that God's put a lot of great people on this team. And if I try to make it about me and I make myself the hero, then I'm not really leading because I'm not the hero. They're not the heroes. We're all in this together trying to serve and point to other people to Jesus, who is the hero of this story.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is a really good leadership lesson. What has some of the fruit been like on your team as you've led them through this transition? Like how do you feel like it has affected the team overall?
I think one of the coolest things that I've had the opportunity to see that maybe some of the other leads haven't because they've been on since the beginning is that I handed the team off to Abigail and then I took a long break to kind of figure out what it was like to be a dad after my daughter was born. And coming back to the team, I guess like a few 6 months ago or so, seeing people who had just joined the team like a couple weeks before I left, now serving as team leads, and seeing other people who were like, excited to step up and be team leads who I'd never like they hadn't joined the team when I left. That was really cool to see, wow, this is making a difference. Like we are taking people and drawing them deeper into this project that we've all engaged on together of trying to reach Cambridge and Boston with the gospel. And that these people, you know, maybe they would have joined another team and they would have become leads on that team, but
we got them first.
We got them first. and it's just cool to see how that change has happened.
No, that's cool. That's a good point. I think what you were saying too about listening to your other leads and not micromanaging is such a cool thing to see. And I think a lot of our leads really bring a piece that I definitely don't have and bring energy and vision. Like even recently, Eric James joined our team a few months ago and immediately he had all these ideas about how to do things safer, like things that he does at work and were just second nature to him that I'd never thought of. Like, hey, we should not be lifting the speakers every week. There's a different way we can do this. We can store them here. Something I honestly had never thought of. And then Peace, who just comes in with the best attitude I've ever seen early on Sunday mornings. That's always convicting to me. Nate, who is always positive response to all the emails. He's like the only one. Just like, oh my gosh, someone cares to read my email. You know, so like everyone brings a different piece that is convicting and challenges me and changes the way that I operate as a leader as well. So I think, yeah, that's been really cool to see how that, as you add new leaders, that it does change the flavor. Yeah, the flavor of how we lead.
And it frees you up to focus more on discipleship. So I remember one of the things that we did few months after I started leading the team is I realized I can do the scheduling and the administrative stuff and the sending of emails, but man, that is not my lane. And it's just not
Amen.
Where I get my joy. I get my joy out of lifting things and putting out chairs. And yeah, that's why I'm on this team. So, so we talked with Stephanie Toledo, and she couldn't serve on Sunday mornings because she had two young kids and couldn't get here and you know, had to be a mom. But she had time throughout the week, so she was happy to do the scheduling and was happy to take care of the emailing and all of those kind of logistical details of being a team lead. And being able to hand that off has it revolutionized my ability to think about what the team needed, because I wasn't spending most of my time trying to put out administrative fires.
Yes. Shout out to the scheduler, Stephanie, and now Jess Davidson, who does it. Oh my gosh. They are the real superheroes.
The true story.
They do way more work than we do, honestly.
All right, let's take a moment. I want to ask you two about your leadership transition. So Abigail served on the team, led on the team for a long time. Josh selfishly had a baby, and or his wife selfishly had a baby.
It was to bring joy to all of you.
Yes, just take that out. Tyler.
She I'm does bring Amy. Quite a bit of joy.
She does. Anna's awesome. But Josh, so Josh stepped down. Josh transitioned this leadership over to Abigail so he could focus on that transition and also school projects. And just the demands on Josh's time got to be pretty heavy in that season. And so what was that transition like for you all? How did you broach that subject with Abigail? How did that even go?
I felt like it was pretty obvious. So I think you'd won the volley that year or the year before for the setup team because you cared about discipleship. Like the stuff that it seemed like you were bringing to my attention was the kind of stuff that I wanted to have been thinking about myself, but just hadn't been. And so it was like, wow, here's somebody who's taking the team in the kind of direction that I think we need to go already. So yes, you step up. It's your turn.
Yeah.
At least that's what I remember going through my head.
Yeah.
That's what I told him to say.
What did you think? what did he actually say, Abigail?
Something probably like that. But I was surprised. I did not expect to be the leader. I don't know if I really wanted to be the leader, but it happened. And I said yes. And at that point, it was a pretty well-oiled machine. Stephanie was scheduling already, which took a huge weight off of the leader's job. And she was doing all that, putting the time in. So it was really, it wasn't a huge change, honestly, because there were so few of us at the time. All the leaders would get together and talk and kind of plan things out together. And we were very much on the same page. So it was a pretty smooth transition, I would say.
Yeah.
I remember it being hard to decide that that was the right thing to do, to step down. And that it was kind of a check on myself to think about, okay, do I want to be at the center of all of this? Or is it really more about making disciples and building leaders and building people who can build people? And that really I've succeeded if I've replaced myself rather than I failed if I have to leave. To think about, to try and find the right way to think about that took some time. Because man, the achiever in me wanted to stay on and do this and be like, yeah, sure, I can carry a baby and lift speakers, like no problem.
And then we accidentally hoist the baby up instead of the speaker.
Yeah,
and
put the baby on the truss, and it was a bad week.
So. Yeah. It's really interesting to me when so many times Josh, to kind of speak to that, releasing Abigail into this role was definitely the right call for that season. Continues to be the right call, but at the same time, this isn't a forever commitment. Like, it's not, you're not making covenant with the leadership position of the setup team. You're making covenant with Jesus, and as he walks with us and leads us and calls us into different lanes, the most healthy thing for our church, even as leaders, is for us to be in the lanes that God has called us.
Yeah.
And sometimes those lanes shift and change over time, and that's so the best thing for Abigail was for Josh to get out of the way at that moment.
Totally.
Definitely. Totally. And so, and the best thing, you know, and best thing for our church. And yet, for those who don't know, Josh was freed, and he taught classes. He led alpha groups, taught life and doctrine, I think, as well.
Yep.
And so he didn't just stop serving, but the nature of his service changed. Now he's back on the setup team, and now he's serving under Abigail.
It's terrible.
And so, but that is a sign of health, I think, in our church when we're able to transition. Well, it's not like Josh burnt out. I mean, I'm sure he was tired, but it wasn't like he just walked away. But rather he's like, no, God's calling me to something. How can I transition to the right person? And so Abigail's name rose to the top. And so we've been thankful for her leadership as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and it's something I have encouraged on my team in the past as well. When people have come to me and said, like, oh, I'm not, you know, maybe I want to step down from leadership, I have never fought that because I never want anyone on my team that doesn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. I never want to convince someone to be a leader. Everyone can convince someone that they should serve because I want that to be an overflow of their relationship with God. I want them to be where they should be. And sometimes people should not be on the setup team. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people should not be leaders. If you don't have the passion for it, if you're not excited to be there, that is going to affect the team negatively. So whenever anyone doesn't want to be a leader anymore, I'm like, great. Like, do what God's called you to do. And if it's, you know, I think it's important to note as well that leading on the setup team is not better in any way than staying home with your family. Like, that is leading your family. That's discipling your children who are the next generation. So there's like great honor and maturity in choosing your family over serving on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can, you know, that shifts and change seasons of life, but like that is absolutely where God wants you to be in certain seasons.
Yeah. Mm. Let me ask you this, Abigail. So what does it look like now systematically? Like, looking to make disciples as a team, what are some of the really points of emphasis on your team? Like, what are the systems that you put in place, or the habits that you've cultivated over time, or relational touch points? Because all full disclosure, my daughter is joining a team right now in our church, and I picked the setup team on purpose for her first team. She probably won't be on the setup team forever. And I didn't pick it because of the low bar. I picked it because of the people on the team. And obviously that I can't serve alongside her just because of the unique position that I'm in. But I trust the leaders in the setup team to make sure that she not only just does a task. And I trust many of our leaders. This is not a dig on any of you other awesome leaders out there. But I've just seen the culture created and consistently over time. I said, okay, this isn't easy for me. Yeah, she's going to be on the setup team for a good season. I'm thankful for that, but behind the scenes, what do you do to make that happen, Abigail?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with leadership and, you know, being on the same page with the other leads, which I think everyone is, and that's cool to see. Everyone's style is a little bit different, but logistically, we huddle up at the beginning and just go over names and, you know, pray over the time. Here are the top three things that we need to get done this morning, and then the real... Well, I won't say they're real. Part of the discipleship time takes place afterwards.
After you complete the task, yes. After all the chairs are out, after the stage is built.
So we set up and then we go downstairs, grab snacks and have time to go over prayer requests, pray for each other. Mm-hmm. There's a teaching, not like a teaching, but a verse. You know, we try to bring the Bible into it every time, which is actually something that was reinforced by Mike a couple weeks ago when he's like, no, we need to be actually sharing the Bible every time, not just like our opinions. And so that's been like a good reminder for me and for all of us. Sometimes we get off track with that. But that is an emphasis, you know, bringing the word, bringing prayer requests, getting to know each other. And we try to have 10 to 15 minutes before the big leaders meeting that we, that's more of our sharing time. And then for teardown, it happens before. Well, we're sorting all the connection cards is normally bringing a question, trying to engage people, praying together and such.
Great.
And I think it shows up in the language that the leadership uses to talk to one another and to talk to the rest of the team, that, you know, you get a scheduling email and it talks about the importance of making disciples, or you get, you know, an email that thanks you for responding to a scheduling request, and it, you know, and there's a line about discipleship and about how we're doing this to bring glory to God. That it's almost incidental that what we do is put up chairs. And that's really cool to see that that's how the leadership now talks about what we do.
And it's even to remind ourselves, honestly, because I can get there in the morning and I love doing tasks and that's all I can think about. So if I'm saying it out loud, it's reinforcing to myself. This is more important. If someone is, you know, shows up late, doesn't come, like my first reaction should be, hey, how are you? Like, what's going on? Can I pray for you? If someone leaves the team, I'm going to call that person. Hey, what's going on? What's going on in your life? How can we serve you? And we've had people tell us, you know, I'm at the hospital with this. I'm struggling with this. Okay. You should join a group, not a team at this point, you know? So it's like shepherding people, you know, you have stories and instances where that happens and you're like, oh, this is why, like, this is why, we serve together. It's not just to do the task. It's to actually care about the people on our team.
Sarah, I think all of our teams have, as far as I'm aware of, they currently have some kind of method of midweek communication, right? I don't think I'm going to say this and like some team out there is going to say, oh no, we don't do that. I think all of our teams.
I think so. As far as I know.
And so we all have, like midweek communication rituals, but the first team that I know of that really started it, I think, was the setup team. I think like every week, communicating with one another. This was predated our failed attempt at Slack for all of our team leaders and all of this stuff. But one thing for all you leaders out there that I've noticed over time is, I think Josh started this. He started a weekly email to all the team leads when he and it was just like kind of how to keep your head above water. Like, okay, what went wrong? What went awesome? But then that email, because I'm still CC'd on all of them, so I see them.
Sorry about that.
For all of you leaders, no, it's okay. I don't mind. And it just gets archived with everything else. But after I read it. But what's encouraging to see from you all and from that team is the constant question that I think I see more effort put to answer, which is, how did this week go from a discipleship perspective? Like, there's always like one short little answer, like yes, no, maybe, to like all the other questions, like, did everybody show up on time? What did we need to do? Like, was there any challenges? Is anything broken? Like, there's really short one-liners. But you get to that question, how did it go from a discipleship perspective? It's never just awesome or okay. It's this and this and this and this happened, and we need to continue praying for these people, and God's doing great stuff, and I love serving with you guys. Like awesome. You can see that culture. And so I just want to say, as one of the pastors from our church, thank you for creating that. I'm floored by it. Like, that the team that puts out the chairs has the longest track record, in my opinion, of focusing on discipleship. Now, I would argue that there's some other teams out there who are doing as good of a job, so I'm not like putting anybody down, but to see this culture that I think was birthed in our church starting from your team, and maybe it was just that one moment that said, why are we here? To make disciples. Okay, well, we got to figure out how to do that as we put out chairs, has been super encouraging to see. So I just want to say thank you for leading our people in that.
Well, thank Jess Davidson who sends out our weekly emails.
Yes, well, Jess sends out emails. She's amazing. Yes. And she took over Stephanie, Stephanie's getting a new job in our church. So not a job, but a new, she's going to schedule
unpaid for job.
A new
role.
And she's been giving a new, an anointing God's given her. Her anointing is going to continue to transform our scheduling. But yeah. Sarah, any last questions for these two awesome leaders in our church?
No, you guys are awesome. It's been really cool to see this team, really lead the way in this. And I know for me as a team leader, it's been cool to look at it and be like, okay, if the setup team can figure out how to do this, then so can we. Like, how are we going to do this? So, yeah, well, it's been great.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a thing we've had to focus on because so many of us are task-oriented, introverted people.
Yeah.
And discipleship is a relational thing. And our lane is just do the job. Yeah. And if we didn't do this intentionally, it just wouldn't get done.
Yeah.
Mm. That's awesome.
Not only can we make disciples, but we can also potentially meet our future spouse on setup. Just want to put that out there.
That is true, Abigail, Connor. So you could meet your spouse on the team.
It's my favorite part of setup.
Hey, listen, we're not saying it is going to happen, but we're not saying it's not going to happen either. So
the more people join, the better the odds get.
So ask all your friends to join your team. There you go. That's the takeaway. Lastly, Abigail, what song are you singing this year for Or are you going to sing a song? You're going to make it
that is a secret, and I cannot disclose any information. For the volleys,
you're not going to give us any kind of sneak peek?
No,
anything?
No way.
Will there be something, though?
Oh, obviously.
Okay.
No boring speeches here.
Abigail Connor is going to rock the volleys again this year. If you haven't yet planned, prepare yourself for the volleys 2019. All right, well, there you have it. We had a great time with Josh and Abigail, didn't we, Sarah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was so good to be with them. They're tremendous leaders, and many of you are as well. And I'm so encouraged by you all just being disciplined and just what many people might see as just the boring strokes of serving in a church, everyday life, helping an organization that you care about exist, can be leveraged for gospel impact and making disciples. So leaders, we love you. We're praying for you. Hope you're having a great week. And we're also really excited what you'll be hearing from us in our next podcast, which who do we have on the docket, Tyler?
Shelby and Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin McKenzie and Shelby Doyle to talk about
missional living.
Talking about missional living. It's going to be great, and we hope that you'll tune in next week as well. God bless. See you soon.